You're listening to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys, I'm going to open up today with just some personal frustrations that I experienced this morning. That's probably not too dissimilar from other things that people have experienced, but if nothing else, you can take a moment and laugh at me. So it was about 6 weeks ago, my girlfriend and I decided we are going to adopt a puppy. Now, we already have an older dog. She's a pit bull, and she's the sweetest dog I've ever had in my life. Totally dispels any stereotypes that I ever had about pit bulls across the board. I have seen some bad ones, but this one is an unbelievable sweetheart. And she's probably about 7 years old. And, you know, feeling a little bit fat, a little bit lazy, because she's got one gimpy leg. We had it operated on a couple of months ago. It should be working. She's still not used to using it. Anyhow, we're working on it. So we got a puppy, a Labrador puppy. He was probably about, I guess about 8 weeks old at the time. She's probably about 13 weeks old now. And just to kind of try and keep her young, which has worked. And he's, for the most part, a pretty good little dog. Well, a few weeks back, my adult daughter has to go back to Australia to help her mother out, who had a medical condition that she needs some help with. So my daughter, who has a small, old, like 10, 11, 12-year-old little Pomeranian dog and a cat, didn't find homes for any of those, so now I have to take care of those. I went from having one dog to having three dogs and a cat in my care in about 10 days' time. I'm not happy about this. I'm really a one-dog kind of guy, and that's it. But I stretched it with two, and I've got three and a cat dealing with my daughter's animals for another, I don't know, month and a half. So anyhow, the little Pomeranian doesn't like the Labrador puppy, who, when we got him, he was about 18 pounds. Now he's about 33 pounds. He's just huge. The old, delicate little Pomeranian doesn't like the Labrador. But the Labrador has some tactics. What he does is he'll always enter through a doorway first, or wait at a doorway, so then anybody else that comes through, he can pounce on and play with. He literally ambushes the other dogs. So I'm trying to teach him, I'm in the process of teaching him, go through the door, walk about 10 feet, and then turn and sit down. Or wait about 5 feet from a door before you go through it if it's being opened for the first time, not if you're the first through. And also to sit and wait before you open it. Well, now, today I'm trying to get the little Pomeranian out of my daughter's room because that's where the Pomeranian and the cat live. They have a big bathroom, and that's where their food and water is because they don't get along with my dogs very well, especially the cat and the pit. They just don't get along. So anyhow, I go to get the little Pomeranian. Little Pomeranian, scared of the lab, won't come out, goes, scurries under the bed. Now I am just pissed. Not happy. So I go to put my dogs out so I can come up here to the studio and do the radio show. And the lab now, because I was pissed because of the whole Pomeranian situation, won't get out of the house. Keeps running deeper into the house. I have a 2,500 square foot house. And there's long hallways and, you know, rooms all over. So I've got to chase this dog down, pick him up, and take him outside. Well, about the last 20 feet before the door, 20, 25 feet, what does he do? He starts leaking all over the house from point A to point B, partly on me. And I have a schedule to keep. So now I'm not just PO'd, I'm PO'd. Not just off, but on. Now I have to go and take off all my clothes and take a quick shower and get everything ready and scurry here into the studio with about 2.5 minutes before the show. So, since my segment one preparation wasn't all that great, I decided to talk about the reason why my segment one wasn't put together, and all of you can now have a wonderful time smiling at my misfortunes for the day. And that's just the way my day started, and I've got a very long, heavily scheduled day today. And this is the wonderful world in which my day gets to start. I hope all of you had a slightly more conducive morning where the schedule is working a little bit better for you. We do have some actual things to get to, information in the news, some gun-related things happening. So stay tuned. We will get to those after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, and you're tuned in live right here to 2A Radio.
It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
You know, there's a saying that freedom isn't free, and you must fight for it. Well, there is a perfect example of that happening now. The Firearms in Commerce Assessing the Need for Reform in the Federal Regulatory Process. That is the notice of a committee hearing. It's the Senate Committee on the Judiciary has scheduled this particular hearing. Again, the title is Firearms in Commerce Assessing the Need for Reform in the Regulatory Process. That'll be happening this next Tuesday, September 14th, 2010, at 10 a.m. at the Dickerson Senate Office Building, room 226. So just so you understand, that the Senate will be entertaining something dealing with reform in the regulatory process. Now, we might like to think, yeah, that might be some good reform. Realize Democrats control both houses of Congress. Do you really think it's going to benefit us? Whenever the government gets together and decides to do something, does the government actually ever benefit the people? Okay, well then who do they benefit? Well, they benefit the people who are heavy financial campaign donors and themselves. That's who benefits. Can you think of a single piece of legislation that has gone through and become law in the last 25, 30 years that has actually benefited the people and not benefited or not benefited further the heavy campaign contributors and the lawmakers in D.C. themselves? A single piece of legislation. I challenge you, if you find one, send me an email to bill@2aradio.com with your contact information, and we'll get on the air together so that we can learn all about this individual wonderful bill. I'm looking for anything in the last 30 years, since Reagan became president. I'm looking for anything that's good that actually passed both houses of Congress that benefited you and I, the people, and did not benefit or did not benefit further heavy campaign contributors, and or the lawmakers themselves. That's my challenge to you, the listening audience. Now, we're going to move to California. Assembly Bill 962 passed in California about a year ago, and that's a preemption of federal regulatory interstate commerce when it comes to ammunition and shipping that they're taking over at the state level. And gun owner groups, truckers, several other groups have all gotten together to file a lawsuit to void this particular piece of legislation, which is the handgun ammunition shipping restrictions. Essentially, it's an ammunition ban in California. So, the owner-operator, Independent Drivers Association, or OOIDA, has joined the Cal Guns Federation, the NRA, the Folsom Shooting Club, and two other individual truckers to challenge California's soon-to-be-implemented ban on the interstate shipment of handgun ammunition to California. Now, just last year, Schwarzenegger, the Rhino, Republican in name only, signed Assembly Bill 962 into law, which goes into effect this coming February 2011. The law will criminalize the delivery and transfer of handgun ammunition not done in face-to-face transactions. It also requires shipping companies to implement procedures to determine whether the recipient of a package containing handgun ammunition is covered by one of the exceptions in the law before delivering handgun ammunition to California. This places a big burden on the shipping companies and will make shipping ammunition to California much more difficult and likely, much more likely, very expensive. Now, the lawsuit was filed in Sacramento's Eastern District Federal Court and alleges that the provisions of the law violate the Federal Aviation Administration Authorization Act, which prohibits states and local municipalities from interfering with carriers' rates, routes, or services. Here's the quote. "This isn't about firearms or ammunition. Congress made an important decision to keep motor carriers free from patchwork of burdensome regulation as we move America's goods to our market," says Jim Johnson, OOIDA president. "We cannot allow California to subject our members to criminal liability where the state has no right to meddle." So what you're doing is the very people who should be armed because they're out there driving around the country, up and down the roads of California, need to be able to protect themselves. You're telling them, first of all, you cannot protect yourself, and on top of that, you can't ship stuff in and out of here. The burden's on you, criminally speaking. Now, California depends on the efficient movement of goods by carriers into California. California legislators have become accustomed to trampling the rights of California's gun community. However, this time they've taken that recklessness into a field that will hurt everyone in California. AB 962 will slow down everyone who orders goods online or buys goods at a retail store. This, according to Gene Hoffman, chairman of the Cal Guns Foundation. Now, in February 2008, a unanimous United States Supreme Court, which is very rare, struck down Maine's directly analogous law regulating delivery of cigarettes to Maine in Roe versus New Hampshire motor transport. It does not matter what the state's goal or how horrible they believe their cause is, stated the lead attorney, Jason Davis. Roe made it very clear that a state cannot interfere with a carrier's rates, routes, or services. AB 962 just did that. Now, at Sacramento Shooting Valley Center, we currently provide handgun ammunition sales to the public, according to Jim Brass, president of Folsom Shooting Club. Should the shipping restrictions in AB 962 take effect, we have no way to prove that shippers that we are a handgun ammunition vendor under that law. This case follows the Second Amendment and Commerce Clause challenge titled State Ammunition versus Lindy and a California State court challenge to the vagueness and other requirements of AB 962 brought by the NRA and CRPA Foundation Legal Action Project. The delivery prohibitions of AB 962 take effect this coming February. Plaintiffs in the case will be moving quickly to obtain an injunction before the shipping portions of the law take effect. Now, let's talk a little bit about the balance of AB 962. If you live in California, you're only allowed to buy 50 rounds of handgun ammunition every 30 days. Period. And the retailers must keep track, keep a log, subject you to fingerprinting when you buy 50 rounds of handgun ammo. If you buy 50 rounds of handgun ammo today on the 9th, and you go back next month on the 2nd to do the same thing, it's not per calendar month. It's every 30 days. You will be violating the law. All of that paperwork, all of those records go to where? The cops. And they are now mandated to have to look all this up. And the anti-gun sheriffs and police chiefs throughout different portions of California, the majority of California, in fact, will be looking these things up, cross-referencing them. And if you bought with 29 days in between at two different retailers, guess what? They're going to come get you. You bet your butt. Now, that means that if you are Johnny on the spot every 30 days, or every 31 days, you go to get your handgun ammunition. The very most that you can purchase in California per year is 600 rounds. Now, most courses that you take would be at least 500 rounds. And I'm here to tell you, as a professional firearms trainer, you cannot develop, you certainly cannot maintain your skills at 50 rounds per month. You cannot do it. If you dry practice lots, like 10, 15 minutes a day, every single day, and then you fire at the end of the month your 50-round allotment. Allotment. The government's now telling you how much of something you can own. Something that is otherwise completely unregulated when it comes to purchase and possession and use. They're now allotting you 50 rounds a month. You cannot maintain your skill at 50 rounds per month. They are disarming California by the use of handgun ammunition. They introduced another bill, which was just defeated last week, to include several popular rifle rounds, namely 5.56 millimeter or 223, the civilian designation for the AR-15 and Mini 14 round, and also 7.62x39, popular in SKSs and AK-47s. That failed the first time through. I'm sure it'll come back after the November 2nd elections. Stay tuned, folks. Plenty more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
You know, there's been huge anti-Democrat sentiment. We're talking political party, anti-Democrat sentiment throughout the country. Really, thanks in large part to the Tea Party in the last 18 months. And just the fear of everything that's been going on and all of the plans and all of the racketeering and the theft of the wealth, the theft of industry, the controlling and regulation and outright ownership of other different parts of the American economy, the outsourcing and sale of our money to foreign nations has just really got a lot of people in this country completely ticked off. And if it's not one party in power completely hosing us, it's the other. My opinion is I love it, absolutely love it, when one of the two houses, either the House of Representatives or the Senate in, on Capitol Hill, one of those two is heavily favored to one political party and the other one is heavily favored to another political party. Doesn't really matter to me who the president is so much when it comes to lawmaking then. Because then the houses just butt heads. They just simply butt heads. They can't get anything passed unless everybody makes a lot of money doing it. So they don't have a bunch. It's not just a downward slide where Republicans can get anything through because they got the House, the Senate, and the White House. Or the Democrats, as they would now. They got the House, the Senate, and the White House. They can just throw anything down that slide they want. So I'm happy when they move things around. Now, here's an article that says Republicans have what it takes to capture the House. I don't know if they have what it takes to capture the Senate. There are 33 senators running this time through. They have 10 more than Republicans. I don't know what the, like how many Republicans and how many Democrats are running for the Senate right now. I haven't looked that up. I don't know. But this article, they believe that the Republicans have what it takes to capture the House. They say, if the election were held today, Republicans would have a good chance at capturing the House of Representatives. It's impossible to predict what will happen in November when voters head to the polls in the 2010 midterms. But looking at the current landscape and polling, it shows that a stagnant economy, a bleak job market, an unpopular health care bill, a suffering Gulf, and lawless borders have put Democrats on very shaky ground. And this isn't just elections. Democrats hold the House, the Senate, and the White House, giving them total control. If the GOP were to take either legislative body or both, a power balance would be achieved. Exactly my point. Now, just so you that understand, people have asked, what does GOP stand for when it comes to Republicans? It stands for the Grand Old Party. The Grand Old Party, the Republicans, GOP, that's how it works out. Okay. Let's see here. Generic congressional ballot polls show the GOP with an edge today. Numbers by Rasmussen, Fox News, Quinnipiac show the right being the Republicans, with a 9-4 and 5-point lead respectively, and with a margin of error of plus or minus 3%. So that means all of them put the Republicans with a majority. Enthusiasm is also on the GOP side. Republicans are much more engaged in the coming election and more inclined to say that they are certain to vote on current hot button issues. They're more willing to get out there and say right now how they would vote, where the Democrats are really kind of playing hide the weenie on that one. According to the Pew Center's president, Andrew Kahoot. His name is Kahoot. What? Great. The much talked about GOP enthusiasm edge over the Democrats is turning into a sizable voter turnout advantage. One even bigger than in 94 when conservatives shocked Washington and took control of the House and Senate. Now, the GOP needs to win 39 seats, which control and remove Speaker Nancy Pelosi from her leadership post, and also the Air Force 757, which is her private taxi to shuttle her old fat ass back and forth to Northern California and D.C. at a cost of about $50,000 per trip. Because the little jet that they provided her, which is a perk of being the Speaker of the House, had to stop and refuel between California and D.C., and she didn't like that. It was too inconvenient. So now we're paying triple the price, and she's got her own private 757. Right. Good job, Nancy. Screw America. You're going to get what you want individually. You know, I got to tell you, as bad as my morning started today with dog problems and the dog peeing on the house and around the house and me with this puppy and all the issues that I had this morning, which is a very difficult morning, let me tell you, very difficult morning. At least I didn't wake up as Mr. Pelosi, because someone has to wake up like that every day of their life. Anyhow, all of this stuff coming on down here, what we're looking at is some of the very strong Democrats in the House and in the Senate are all up for very difficult re-election bids. Namely as well, right here in my home state of Nevada, Senator Harry Reid hopefully going to be going down and going down hard to Republican Sharon Engel. And that'll be good for the entire country. Folks, stay tuned. There is plenty more to come here on 2A Radio. You're listening live, and I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
All right, guys, welcome back. Now, we're going to chat just for a moment here about one of the recurring subjects here on 2A Radio that's not actually Second Amendment directly related. It's kind of an offshoot, and it's about the Arizona's immigration issues. And the reason I bring this up is with all of the illegal activities coming north through the southern border that Arizona shares with Mexico, there's a lot of crime, and there's a lot of really dangerous situations going on. So you need, in Arizona, at least in the southern half of Arizona, to be armed and be trained. I have a lot of friends, and I have family members and buddies that I've shot with a lot that live in the southern portion of Arizona. And everybody down there needs to have a gun. They need to have it with them, and they need to know how to use it. Now, Arizona has done some excellent things, absolutely excellent things, when it comes to legislation that's been passed this last legislative session. First of all, they passed their own Firearms Freedom Act, declaring their 10th Amendment powers and authority and rights as a state to actually tell the federal government, look, any guns that are manufactured in this state and are sold in this state and remain in this state, guns, ammo, and accessories, are free of the Interstate Commerce Clause, which gives the federal government, provides the federal government with so much authority. It's ridiculous. So what they say is, we're going to allow gun manufacturers to build guns, load ammo, and make accessories that are solely for the purpose of never leaving the state of Arizona. So that exempts you guys. They follow along with Montana, Tennessee, and several others. So they passed that law. They passed a law that said, if you're going to run for president of the United States, if you want to be on the ballot here in Arizona, you're going to have to prove to us with certified, authentic documentation that you are qualified to run as president of the United States. So that means that Obama will not be running for re-election in Arizona, because he won't be able to provide that, best of what we can all figure. Otherwise, if he had that documentation and information, it would have been put out there long ago, rather than spending a few million dollars out of his own pocket to defend where people say, look, we don't have any documented proof that this guy is, honest to God, a naturalized citizen. Provide us with this, that, the other, because we have these other things that show otherwise he would not be a naturalized citizen and shouldn't be holding the office of president. Additionally, Arizona just went to what's called constitutional carry. They joined the likes of Vermont and Alaska, where if you are legally allowed to own and possess a handgun, we don't require anything special to carry it open. We're no longer going to require anything special to carry it concealed. You don't need to come to us, the government, to get a permit to carry concealed in Arizona. Unnecessary. Well, rock on. Because I have to tell you, here's my argument. We have concealed weapons permits in Nevada, but we're an open carry state. So really, the garments which you decide to wear, your clothing, takes you from either being a law-abiding citizen or a criminal, based on the use of a garment. Now, in my world, the clothes that you choose to wear shouldn't make any difference whatsoever. You are still bound by the exact same laws. The places that you're not allowed to carry, all of the places you are allowed to carry, and the actual justified use of force in the defense of yourself or someone else. All of those things are still the same. The only difference is whether somebody can see you packing or not see you packing. And if you want to make it to where they cannot see that you're packing, it's the gun's invisible to them, you have to pay money, take a course, go through approval, and all this other garbage to exercise a right based merely on that of the garment in which you choose to wear. Now, I'll tell you this. I choose to carry exposed. In the town that I live in, a lot of people carry exposed. And it's not unusual to see people carrying exposed. And that, we don't have mass shootings in this town. We just don't. If there's ever any sort of use of a gun, it's like what you'd see in any big city where it's the middle of the night and someone goes into a convenience store and shoots the clerk and robs the cash register. Or it's a crime of passion, something generally with like domestic violence. That's what we have in this town. Or somebody who's completely wasted out of their head on meth and decides that they don't want to get pulled over by the cops, so they're going to shoot at the cops. However, you don't see a bunch of individual strong-arm robbery in this town. It just doesn't go on because so many people carry guns. and a lot of them open. That tells everybody else, look, I'm one of the good guys. And it tells the bad guys, don't come after me. Now, the anti-gunners would like to think that if someone's carrying exposed, that's a bad thing, because the first thing that a bad guy's going to do is see you and decide, I'm going to take your gun from you. You're my first victim, and now I'm going to be armed. An unarmed criminal is going to look at an armed citizen and say, that's the guy I'm going after. I'm going to go get his gun. That is the most empty-headed, ridiculous argument you could ever have. Because all you have to do is put the shoe on the other foot, really turn it around and put yourself in the shoes of the criminal. Okay, now I am an unarmed scumbag. I am a criminal. Why am I a criminal? Well, 80% chance I am an alcoholic, or even higher percentage, I am a drug addict. And why am I committing crime? Why am I out to commit a crime? Because I need to feed my habit. How do I know I need to feed my habit? Because I'm starting to go through the DTs. I'm starting to feel jittery and wired. I've got to get my smack. I've got to get it. So I'm looking around. I need to score quickly. And then I need to go get my junk. That's what I need. Vast majority of criminals. Vast majority. Take it from a guy who's a former cop that arrested a lot of people. Now, if you see someone who's not paying attention, digging around in their purse, or talking on their phone and looking at the ground, whatever, is that a more attractive potential victim to you? Or is it the guy or the gal walking around with a gun exposed on their hip? Which one are you going to go after, and which one are you going to leave? I'll tell you this, you will absolutely not go after the person with the gun, especially when you are unarmed. And take it to the more likely level, if you are unarmed and you need a fix. You're looking for something quick and easy. Going after somebody who's got a gun on them is just stupid. It's even stupid to the stupid people. The stupid people think that that's stupid. That's an extra special kind of stupid. And who in the world would think like that? Who is so stupid that they're stupider than stupid people? Anti-gunners. That's who. The people who actually think that criminals would do that. Those are the people that are stupider than the stupid people who know that going after somebody with a gun when you're not is stupid. Anti-gunners. The people far on the left that hate guns. They are that stupid. Now, keep in mind, ignorance can be fixed. Okay? Ignorance is a condition of simply not knowing something. If you wanted to ask me about what it takes to, I don't know. I'm looking around my studio trying to find something I know nothing about. If you wanted to ask me the specifics about injection molded plastic, I probably would not be able to hold much conversation on injection molded plastic. A little bit. I have a little experience with it. I've worked with plastics, but not much. I am ignorance. Ignorance, you can fix. It is, in fact, a curable condition by learning. Children are ignorant. When they go through school and they learn a bunch of stuff, they're not so ignorant as they were when they were a child. They've learned. Stupid is just a mental disease. And usually anybody, for the most part, who is registered with a D next to their name, oftentimes you consider that person just simply stupid. All right? That's just the way things are. If you're ignorant, it's curable. If you're stupid, you're just broken. That's all. As a matter of fact, and I have to thank my guys in the studio for this, stupidity can be maternal. All right? So when these stupid anti-gunners say that the stupid criminals are going to do an even more stupid act that's so stupid the stupid criminals wouldn't do it, that makes them incredibly stupid. Well, getting back to this whole thing with the immigration problems in Arizona, the White House has admitted that their lawsuit against Arizona's SB 1070, that has really drawn some problems with some governors who are Democrats. They admitted that several Democratic governors complained that the Justice Department lawsuit against Arizona's SB 1070 immigration law says that the legal fight is angering their constituents and distracting from federal efforts to boost the sluggish economy. Now, reports of the confrontation first surfaced in the New York Times, and White House press secretary, got to be the worst White House press secretary in the history of White House press secretary, Robert Gibbs. This guy is stupid. I mean, he is just an absolute moron, a degenerate moron. Anyhow, he confirmed the discontent, which is one of the only honest things that's ever come out of his stupid mouth. This guy truly is stupid. If he were ignorant, he would have learned long ago. He's in politics. He's just stupid. He says, from the reading that I got from the individuals that were at the meeting, that this came as a fairly small part at the end, meaning he's saying nothing. We understand the frustration of all of those involved, Arizona included, in the federal government's inability to comprehensively deal with the problem of immigration. Comprehensive. You know what? You need individual steps. You don't need something that's such a comprehensive effort, because when you try to do comprehensive things, every individual portion of that falls apart. You guys are stupid. You don't know how to run a country. You don't know how to run an ice cream maker. If I sent you an ice cream maker, you probably wouldn't be able to figure out how to use it. You probably fall off of bicycles because you have no balance, because your brain is such mush. Continuing, Gibbs said that the White House knows the lawsuit filed against Arizona's immigration law is ill-timed for Democrats in swing for congressional districts and competitive Senate races, as well as governors running for re-election. Everybody in a political season and in this calendar has certain equities, Gibbs said. While the timing of these things may be inconvenient, this administration is here to do what it thinks is right, not simply to look at the calendar and then decide what is right. Oh, you are so full of crap. It's unreal how full of garbage you really are. Just anything laying around the yard that seems to mold and mildew, just pile all that crap into Gibbs, because that's what he's getting in. He's getting garbage in. He's getting garbage out. You mean to tell me that on Labor Day, when Obama comes out and says, I want to rebuild roads and bridges and highways and railroad tracks and airport runways, and I want to do it for $50 billion, and that's what I want to do, and I want to get it done before the election. You mean to tell me that he's not looking at the calendar and deciding what is right and what's not? Guys, here is the absolute underlying thing. There is a tell, and I have given this information before. I'm going to give it again for the newer listeners. There is a telltale sign when someone who is a politician is lying. If you are in political office and you have a lie to tell, or you want to just kind of redirect or give a mistruth or give a partial truth, or otherwise just try to, you know, get the attention, the focus on something else, and you're not being completely 100% fully honest, there is one absolute certain tell that every single politician does in the modern day and age. And I will give you that secret right now. They speak to the press. That's right. Every single time you have a press conference that a politician puts on, you can absolutely guarantee you're not going to get all of the truth and nothing but the truth. They will not swear on a stack of Bibles, or if you're at the White House, swear on a stack of Quran, that you are going to be hearing the entire truth, bar none, no lies, no redirect, no garbage, no BS. You can guarantee there's going to be lies, mistruths, redirects, and just outright blatant misleading of the American public. You can absolutely guarantee that'll happen if you have any politician in America today calling a press conference to talk to the press. That's it. That's the tell. So you know, If you read something, hear something, or watch something that a politician said, it is absolutely not the God's honest truth. Stay tuned, folks. More to come after the break. You're tuned in right here live to 2A Radio. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
And welcome back from the break. You know, yesterday I got several emails liking a lot of the colonial era provisions and laws and interpretations of gun ownership. And I have several more, so I figured I'd finish up the show reading a few more of those. Here's one. The militia are the people at large. That was by Tench Cox, the Attorney General of Pennsylvania and Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under President George Washington. Samuel Adams, in his writings, volume three, page 251, sent to James Warren on January 7th, 1776, he says, the militia is compromised of free, capitalized, citizens. And John Quincy Adams also believes that youth should early be instructed in the use of guns and proper gun safety. In fact, when he was dispatched by President James Madison as minister to Russia, Adams left his three sons in the case of his younger brother Thomas. After arriving in St. Petersburg, Adams wrote his brother with specific instructions regarding the training of the boys, George age 9, John age 7, and Charles age 3. Especially George, Adams told his brother, quote, one of the things which I wish to have them taught and wish no man can teach better than you is the use and management of firearms. This must undoubtedly be done with great caution, but it is customarily among us, particularly when children are under the direction of ladies, to withhold it too much and too long for boys. The accidents which happen among children arise more frequently from their ignorance than from their misuse of weapons, which they know to be dangerous. That was John Quincy Adams' Memoirs of John Quincy Adams, compromising portions of his diary from 1795 to 1848, volume 3, page 497. And that was written to Thomas Boylston Adams in a letter on September 8th of 1810. So you can see where the founding fathers, between yesterday and today when I've read a few of these things, where they sat when it came to guns and firearms, and how essential they were. How absolutely essential they were. At the time, there was no standing army. The biggest enemy at the time were the Brits and the government which they created themselves getting out of control. I flat guarantee you, many decades ago, if the founding fathers were resurrected, they would have taken up arms against the government then. It's way further down the hill now. You can hear now what their interpretations were and their instructions when it came to the founding of this country and how it should be operated.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The two-way radio show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2WayRadio.com. I will not.